Welcome back. You are listening to KXFM on 104.7, broadcast from Laguna Beach, California, all over the world. All right, you guys, I have had some amazing guests on my program, but I don't know if any has caused as much excitement as my next guest has. Neil deGrasse Tyson, unless you have been living under a rock, has inspired more people to look at science, to look at logic, to look at this world, this universe, in such a different way, and has really helped people understand that there is so much more there, and it's amazing to go explore. Mr. Tyson, it is such a pleasure to have you on air. Thank you for joining us on KXFM.
No, I can't live up to that introduction. I'll just be disappointing people at this point.
You know it's true. That's the thing. It's that, it's that you have made it in such a way, your personality, your energy doesn't make us feel intimidated. It makes us feel welcome, and therefore we want to find out more. And that's a gorgeous thing.
Well, thank you for that. Should be any educator's goal, right? It's odd because when you go to college and you take a class, there are lectures, right? How many lectures do you have in a week, or who's lecturing? Whereas think about it, when you're not in school, nobody wants to be lectured to. Isn't that interesting? Stop lecturing me. Don't lecture me, right? It's so there must be some inherent resistance to sitting there and having someone teach you something. So I realized that, and I try to say, is there some other way? Can I bring in some humor or some pop culture or something that you otherwise care about, so that when I attach the science to it, that you walk away saying, hey, that fits in my life. And if you smile en route, you might even come back for more. So, yeah, that's what I try to do, and I'm glad it's succeeding, at least in a few cases.
It's succeeding in a whole lot more than a few, and you know it. I do a lot of work with Indigenous elders all over the world, and they teach and they pass on their history through storytelling. And really, I would say that's one of your fine arts. You will tell stories and you'll weave things into such a way that it draws us into it, and we could insert ourselves into the dynamic. I'm going to start with... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's half of it, putting yourself in the... Thank you for noticing that. Of course you would if you think about storytelling as a part of your professional identity. If the person can be woven into the narrative, they can see themselves there, that's a game changer.
Exactly.
In the moment.
I'm going to start with the first question that I ask every guest, which is... We've had everybody and the cousin on this program. We've had authors and artists and shaman and medicine men, people of service of all kinds of different walks. And to a person, there was an event, there was a catalyst, there was something that thrust them onto a significant aspect of their journey. What story do you want to share with our listeners this morning?
Oh, it's pretty simple, actually. So growing up, my brother, my sister, and I were taken, or should I say dragged, on the weekends to various institutions, cultural institutions, museums, this sort of thing. And I would later realize that this was a marvelous way to wear us out on the weekend, so that we get home and we'd be asleep by 7 or 8 o'clock, and that my parents would have tranquility for the evening. But in the process, this exposure... since it was persistent, it was, oh, is that what some talented grown-ups do, right? We would see a Broadway music. No, think of it. It's not just doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, right? There are people singing on a stage. Mm-hmm. There are people dancing in a theater. There are athletes performing in a hockey game or a soccer game or a football game. There's a museum with exhibits, and there are educators and scientists who put it together, or artists. Art museum. So we were exposed to all, there's an aquarium. Who's keeping the fish alive, right? And so here we are, and meanwhile, something's reaching inside of me, especially when I visited the planetarium. I walk in the planetarium, the lights dim, the stars came out, and I thought it was a hoax. I said, this can't be real. I've seen how many stars there are in the Bronx. There's like 8 stars. That's all you should be showing me. Uh-huh. And you're lying, right? And of course, I would learn that it's the authentic night sky that was being captured. And I was hooked ever since I was 9 years old. In fact, I think the universe chose me, if I might get all spiritual about it.
You know what? Some people may think that's a flippant statement, but I do believe that's actually true, that the universe in some way chooses us. Now, it doesn't obligate us, but it's certainly an offering, and what we do with that is up to each one of us.
You said it perfectly. Yes, it's not a requirement.
Right.
It's like, don't disappoint me, says the universe. No, no, it's an offering. And yes, I took of that offering, and I've never looked back.
And what the heck made it, or you made of your life, so that Carl Sagan recruited you out of high school?
Well, so it was simpler than that, but it still took a huge initiative on his part. So I had applied to, you know, half a dozen colleges or so, and of those that accepted me, I was still trying to decide which one I would go to. And at Cornell, which was one of the colleges, you know, my application was dripping with the universe. If I've cared about the universe since age 9, you know, by the time I'm 17 applying to college, this universe all over that, you know, I was in the astronomy club, I had a telescope, I bought the telescope walking other people's dogs to make money for it. I had a dark room back when that's how you made photos. I had, there's all these things that I did, and it was dripping on the application. I think, I have no other accounting for this, that the admissions office saw this in my application and sent it to Carl Sagan, who's there to the leading cosmic person, saying he has not decided yet whether he should come. What can you do for us? So he then sends me a letter saying, I see you're interested in astronomy. And yes, that's what I do here at Cornell. If you come visit, I'd be happy to show you the lab to help you decide what school to choose.
How much did that blow your mind? Oh, my.
So he was already, he hadn't done Cosmos yet, because that's how old I am, but he was already famous. He was on The Tonight Show, which was controversial for a scientist. That's a comedic talk show, right? How could you possibly stoop to bring your expertise in that venue? But Johnny Carson, who was the host, was very interested in science, and they would have a very long relationship with multiple visits to the show. But anyhow, my parents verified it was real, and I got on a bus and went up to Ithaca, New York, from New York City, and he indeed met me out front, dropped me in the lab, and I never forget this. He did a no-look reach behind his desk chair, right? In his office, he's got his desk and his chair, and there's a shelf. He did a no-look reach, pulls a book that he wrote. Okay, I thought that was gangster, right? I don't have to look. Whatever book is there, I wrote it, right? So I pulled the book, and it's one of his, and he signed it to me, and it said, to Neil, future astronomer, Carl. And I still have that book. But that wasn't even the crux of it. The crux of it was, as the day went long and it was time for me to go back, he drove me to the bus station, and it began to snow, as it so often does in Ithaca, New York. This was in December. Mm. And he said, look, here's my home phone number. The bus doesn't get through. Spend the night with my family and you'll see me tomorrow.
I bet you were praying for that bus not to come.
I can't tell you how many people said to me, you should have just lied. and so that gesture and the entire zeitgeist of that encounter, I said to myself, if I am ever as remotely famous as Carl Sagan, I will treat students the way he has treated me. I swore to myself that day. So to this day, if there's a student outside my door, mm-hmm. okay, And I'm on the phone. I said, Barack, I got a student. I got to call you back. I'm slightly exaggerating there, but almost no matter who's on the other line, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, the student has higher priority. That's who carries the torch to go into the future, and you got to keep that torch going.
You know, it's too bad you hang around with such schlubby people, man.
So that's the story there.
All right. You are performing at the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside on Thursday, October 19th. And look, talking to you for 2 seconds, seeing you for a good portion of my life is inspiration, because there's so much that you do. There's so much that you share. And you know what? In this world that is so rife with BS, you just tell it straight. And that is not only refreshing, but inspiring. And I want to thank you personally for that. And
wow. Okay. Well, thanks for I'm glad it works, right? Because
exactly.
If it didn't work, we're wasting each other's time, right? So, and I try to bring that enthusiasm to the stage. I mean, it's a theater, right? And I don't take it lightly that people are going to give up their Thursday night, go to a theater, okay, and come listen to an astrophysicist talk for 2 hours. This, we're like, what's up with that, right? So I offer the theaters. I'm not there to, yes, there's always a book that you could buy that I happen to have just published, yes. But the theater events are, I send in advance to the host a list of a dozen or so different topics, and they pick what topic they want me to speak on that evening. And so what the folks in Riverside have selected was my talk on what I call Astronomy Bizarre. And it's all the weird, wacky, crazy things that we understand and that we don't understand that's going on in this universe. From, colliding black holes. Are we in a simulation? Could there be wormholes? What's the latest on aliens? Are there... what was around before the Big Bang? Are we, all of these topics that are just freaky, weird, bizarre, that's what's going to fill that talk.
I love that. All right, here's
and
mine.
And I have videos and slides and things, and so it's a full-up thing, and it's a celebration of what we know and what we're on the brink of knowing and what perhaps we're on the brink of never knowing. Universe.
Now that's the part that really fascinates me. To understand the exploration is the thing. It's not the destination. It's not necessarily that we're going to ever know. But the idea that we're willing to go on the adventure is exciting to me.
Yeah, I think that's a eternally true statement, that almost everything that matters in life is an adventure, not a destination. And it's a journey. And in science, to quote the poet Rainer Maria Rilke, at some point you need to learn to love the questions themselves.
Absolutely.
Because that is the foundation of your curiosity and wonder, which themselves are the twin chariots of exploration and discovery.
I agree entirely. Now, there was something somewhat subtle that you just said. Tell us about your latest book, if you would.
Oh, I have two latest books. I would have to sneeze. Hold on.
Bless you.
You just did a tacky on time reversal of that. Before I sneeze. Very good. Very good. So there's a book that came out a month ago, which debuted on the New York Times bestseller list at number 4. So we were all excited. It's called To Infinity and Beyond. It's the third book in collaboration with of my podcast, Star Talk, with National Geographic Books. The book is stunning. It's just, I'd say that even if I didn't co-write it. It's just because Nat Geo makes beautiful books. That's how they roll. It's a beautiful book. And it captures our journey from standing flat-footed here on Earth, looking up, wondering, how would we ever get there or know what's above our heads? To landing on the moon to, that's where we've been with our bodies, to sending our robotic emissaries out to beyond the edge of the solar system and taking our mind beyond the edge of the universe itself. So it captures that journey, and it tells you, when people tried and failed, we tell you that too. That's not always retold in the history books. Icarus plunged to his death because his wings were made of wax. Do you say, well, I'm never going to try to fly because that looks dangerous? Or do you say, I'm going to try to make wings out of a different material? Like, what kind of person are you to help catapult, move forward the human quest to explore? So that's what this book is about. And it goes right on up through, what have we invented in our mind? What have we invented in for real? Do we have space elevators? Do we have wormholes yet? Or is there, no, is the answer, but have we harnessed negative gravity to make wormholes? No, but that's what we need. And along the way, there are movies that have been made that have touched these subjects. And so the scenery along the way, along this journey, is these movies where I comment, did they get it right? Did they get it wrong? That's the pop culture side of this, which makes it a little more relevant than it would otherwise be.
And the only thing, and I know I'm overstepping my bounds, but it's my usual behavior. The only thing I would disagree with that is that there were failures. It's because every single thing that happened, whether it got to the destination or not, informed us on our journey of how to proceed. And therefore, I don't look at it as a failure.
Those, as you shouldn't. And the fact we celebrate the failures in the book, because now people who came after them knew what not to do. All right? So I knew not to make my wings out of wax. Well, of course, I have to make them out of very other different things that we would learn later. But yes, the failures are stepping stones that are not always talked about in history books, yet we go there in this book. And so the title, yes, it smacks of Buzz Lightyear, but
it's just a little.
Nonetheless, it to infinity is, you know, the 400 years ago, the moon was at infinity. Like, how would you get to the moon 400 years ago? It's like, no, that's unreachable. That's your infinity. Now, we've been to the moon. What's the next infinity that we think is out of reach? And so it's metaphor for the unending and persistent human spirit to look up and wonder.
Wow. I just literally got chills.
Oh.
And your next book, your other book that just got released
So that one just came out a month ago. But a year ago, which is still out there, this has my life's wisdom infused in its pages. It's called Starry Messenger, Cosmic Perspectives on Civilization. And it takes all these things that we've all thought about, especially over Thanksgiving dinner with crazy aunts and uncles. Topics such as gender and identity, color and race, law and order, body and mind, life and death, meat eaters and vegetarians, exploration and discovery, earth and moon. These topics that are paired in our mind and body and soul and in our thinking about the world are explored from a cosmic perspective. So all of the fighting that we do by digging our heels in, what if you look at it from a cosmic perspective, often those arguments evaporate, or you have a higher understanding of them that leaves you less in conflict with the person who you are fighting with. And so the book is rife with that. I mean, beginning to end. And I dedicated it to my father, who was a sociologist. I died a few years ago. And I said to my father, Cyril deGrasse Tyson, and all others who imagine a world that can be rather than the world that is.
I can't think of a more...
And it offers solutions to all of these challenges.
Yeah, I can't think of a more timely book. It's this whole world is needing a perspective shift, and that sounds like at least a great facilitator for that.
Yes.
Is there anything you'd feel remiss in if you didn't share with our listeners this morning?
Well, I'm just looking forward to going to the venue and sharing my enthusiasm with the universe. With, you know what I like especially when people, it's geek date night. Because what else can geeks do, right? You go to an amusement park? No, you want something that'll be fun but still kind of intellectually stimulating. So I think of it as geek date night. There was someone else who was a geek, but his loved interest was not a geek, and she didn't really understand where he was coming from, and so she took him to a talk that I gave, and then he won her over, and they got married.
So the moral of the story is, exactly. All right, again, yeah. It's at the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside, Thursday, October 19th. And look, man, it's just, there is no way that you can go to this event and be disappointed. You're going to go out entertained, informed, with greater knowledge, and hopefully a bit more wisdom. And really, that's been my experience of you in this short snippet this morning. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And just to affirm, it's not a book talk, right? I'm talking about something else. It's not even in any of these books.
Oh.
But I don't know if they'll sell the book. I don't know. That's not part of what I'm going there for. But I'm glad we had a chance to chat briefly about the book. But the whole point of this conversation is to announce that I'm coming to town.
Oh, yeah, you are. Can't get better than that. All right, you guys, we'll be back with more right after this.